Your Financial Choices may discuss various financial-related topics and thus would like to offer the following disclosures. Lori Siebert is employed by Valley National Group, the Valley National Financial Advisors Group of Companies. Investments are offered through Valley National Investments Incorporated, member FINRA. We inform you that any federal tax, state tax, financial advice, or information contained in this communication is not intended to be personalized or specific in nature, or to be relied upon for your personal situation in any circumstance. The advice and information are not intended and cannot be used as a tax opinion letter, nor used for the purpose of avoiding tax-related penalties. For personalized advice specific to your own situation, we recommend that you consult your CPA, CFP, or attorney.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. I'm a CPA, CFP, and AEP on the web at yourfinancialchoices.com, and you can listen online each and every week at wdiy.org. Today is March 20th, 2019. The markets were mixed today. The Dow closing down at 25,745, the NASDAQ up at 7,728, and the S&P down at 2,824. Our topic tonight is using the tax return to understand the elements of financial planning. We thought, as it is tax season, and last week we had a fantastic show with listeners' tax questions, had lots of calls, love the calls, love the questions. So, of course, tonight we would also take listeners' calls as well, and in particular about tax questions. We want to help you get those tax returns done. But in that vein, we thought we'll also at the same time look at how the tax return can help us with financial planning. We are live tonight. We will take your questions. Lori C is in the studio and we'll answer your calls, take your information, and we ask you to mute your radio so you can hear us without the delay and we can talk without confusion. If you prefer not to talk on air, that's fine as well. Just give your question to Lori. She'll write it down and bring it in to us. We do discuss general financial planning topics and not specific investments. And while I typically have a topic each week, you can still ask questions off topic, and I will do my best to answer them. The number is 610-758-8810. That's 610-758-8810. Email is also available at yourfinancialchoices.com. And I have a guest this evening. Some of you may recognize her voice from last week. We've brought back Mae Gerhart from Valley National Financial Advisors. She's a financial planner and senior tax preparer at Valley National. And she's back for her second round. She had so much fun the first time, right, Mae?
I did. It was a wonderful session.
So what did you think about our show last week with all the questions?
I was really excited about the questions that came in. I was surprised at how many listeners were so knowledgeable.
WDIY listeners, that's what I say. You're all very sophisticated listeners. That's why I love being on WDIY. So folks, tonight, Mae and I are here again, ready to answer tax questions if you have them. And the number to call is 610-758-8810. And you can talk live on air with us or off air. And if you're not comfortable doing either of those, you can always send questions through the website, yourfinancialchoices.com. As I think it was David maybe who sent a question through. I asked him to follow up with the military question. So I sent him some information on that, Dave. So if you do have questions, yourfinancialchoices.com as well. So Mae, let's kind of set the stage for tonight using the tax return to understand the elements of financial planning. You do a lot of the financial planning at Valley National, and with the tax background, that helps quite a bit as well, because you're going to get your CPA very soon, having passed all four parts of the exam. Again, congratulations on that. But the importance of understanding how tax and financial planning work together. So I thought, why don't we talk about what the elements of financial planning are? So when you're doing a financial plan, what are the areas of someone's financial life that you're kind of looking at?
Well, the first part of any financial plan that we look at is we take a look at the cash flow analysis and budgeting. We want to make sure that they have the correct income, the right outflows. We want to see how much they're saving. We're going to look at their investments to see if the investments fit them appropriately. We take a look at their tax return, which I absolutely love, and it's actually one of the first things I look at aside from their W-2. That can give so many great pieces of information, but there's tax planning in there, retirement planning. We also look at various forms of risk management, estate planning. If they have children, we might look into education planning. And if they have the business, we'll look at their business planning and business succession planning.
Okay, so it can be a myriad of items. And the fabulous thing about financial planning is making sure all of those different aspects work together.
Yeah, work together and fit exactly what that particular client needs based on their situation. Somebody who's in their late 60s is not going to have the same needs as somebody who's in their 20s and just starting out, or even somebody who's in their 40s and has their, you know, first and second child, or who's getting ready to go to college or was just born.
Yeah, very different strategies. Yeah, and I did done a show years ago, probably years ago, I lose track of time, on life stages. And that's kind of what you're talking about there. At different life stages, you might have different financial planning that applies, different saving strategies, different risk management. So in the context of tax season, because that's where we are, and looking at tax returns, you mentioned cash flow. So let's start there. What can you learn from the tax return about someone's cash flow that you use it as a tool in financial planning?
Well, the first section of anybody's tax return talks about their various income sources. You'll be able to see if they're an employee or if they own a business. If they are a business owner, there's various different types of ownership. They could have a Schedule C sole proprietorship. They might be part of an S corp and paying themselves wages and capital gain and also distributions. They might have a partnership or even a C corp.
Mm-hmm. So the income, so those income sources that you're seeing on there. First of all, I guess if someone's you're doing financial planning for someone and they tell you what the income sources are, that's a way that you probably go verify.
Yeah, a lot of people like to tell us what their take-home pay is, so they don't realize that the tax amount is going to be a bit higher, or that they have more wiggle room because they're already including in their take-home pay what they're actually already saving.
Good point. So if someone makes $100,000 and they're paying federal, state, local tax, and Social Security, and they say, oh, you know, I bring home $60,000 a year or something, and on their cash flow budget that they're filling out for the financial planning, mm-hmm. you know that there's something up there.
Yeah, you take a look at the tax return, and you'll be able to see that their line one actually has $100,000 on it.
Yeah, okay, very good. Wages. Let's talk about what else we can learn from the wages. So you talked about looking at line one and looking at that number and you see 100,000, but that might not be the full story either. So I know you also ask for pay stubs.
Yeah.
And W-2s. What are you trying to get at there?
Well, on the W-2s, they have a lot of great information. Box one is actually your federal taxable income. You can see your federal tax withholdings, but you can also look at their Social Security and Medicare wages, which often includes certain things that are taken out of your federal taxable income. A lot of those numbers are included in your box 12. That's going to have retirement plan contributions, health insurance costs, life insurance coverage, or HSA contributions. There's other boxes on the form that'll have restricted stock dividends or personal use of business cars. You'll have the dependent care expenses, if they're putting some money away from that, or even if they have money in non-qualified plans.
So that also is helping paint that picture of cash flow, because if someone is paying, for example, you mentioned dependent care. Do you know off the top of your head how much dependent care they can do? And that's through a flexible spending account?
Yeah, it's $5,000.
$5,000. So if someone tells you in their budget that it's $5,000, $5,000 out of pocket, out of their bank account, out of after-tax money looks very different than $5,000 that they've been able to set aside in a flexible spending account.
Yeah, the flexible spending accounts, they're all pre-tax, so you don't have to worry about all those taxes coming out. So you're actually using 100% of that money directly for those dependent care expenses instead of maybe the $3,000 that you actually get out.
So when you're doing the financial planning and the projection, those numbers could wash out very differently. So it's very important to look at the details of those. And what I think is fun, it's because I'm an accountant. May and I both think this is probably fun, and maybe other people don't, is when it's tax time and you get your W-2, is to look at it and read what those codes mean. So you kind of have an idea of what is being presented in your W-2. I don't know how many people really turn over the W-2 and look at all of the fine print that describes those codes, but it's all told on the back of the W-2 or part of the W-2 what the codes mean.
Mm-hmm. Or you could always Google it if you're not sure.
May's younger than me. folks, we are at our first break. If you have questions, we are also taking listeners' questions, in particular tax questions tonight, if you have them. We had so much fun with it last week. I'm talking with May Gerhardt of Valley National Financial Advisors, and we are talking about how to use your tax return for financial planning. The phone number is 610-758-8810. Back in a minute.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including fee-based asset management. It all starts with personal goals and an understanding of risk tolerance, investment objectives, and the markets. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000. WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services.
WDIY offers many choices and real voices.
This is Steve Aronson. Join me and our other folk music hosts each weekday evening from 7 to 9 for a great mix of classic folk, bluegrass and old-time, Celtic, blues, and contemporary songwriters, plus interviews, concert information, archived concerts, and more.
WDIY is the Lehigh Valley's local source for NPR news, public affairs, and diverse music at 88.1 FM and streaming on WDIY.org.
Welcome back to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. You're listening to Your Financial Choices right here on WDIY. And I have with me this evening May Gerhardt, a senior tax preparer and financial planner at Valley National Financial Advisors. And we're talking about using the tax return as a tool in your financial planning, as well as we're taking questions from listeners this evening for tax questions, if you have any. The phone number is 610-758-8810. That's 610-758-8810. You could talk live on air with us or off air, whatever you're more comfortable doing. We were just mentioning how the tax return shows us some elements of your cash flow. We're looking at wages or business income, and even further, taking a deeper dive in looking at the W-2 and how the W-2 numbers really represent the gross income that someone is getting and what deductions they might be taking from that W-2 income. So we're going to talk about, we've talked a little bit about the codes on the W-2, and we also are going to talk a little bit about learning even more information about what's on pay stubs and things like that. But right now we have a caller in Whitehall. We have, I believe, Keith on line one. Is this Keith?
Yes, hi.
Hi, how are you?
All right, how about yourself?
Great, great. How can we help you?
Okay, so I have kind of a dumb question. I'm going to start off by saying I don't know basically anything about taxes. I normally fill them out online. So.
Okay, that's
but,
good.
I work as a, I provide entertainment for local bars and restaurants, and I filled out my tax information back in January. As soon as I got my W-2s, in the past, I've filled out 1099 miscellaneous forms.
Yeah.
For a company I used to work for, but this year I tried going solo. I figured that I would start my own business with taxes, but found out later that one of the restaurants I worked for actually kind of included me in their taxes. So now I'm trying to figure out how to go back on that and send an amended tax return since I already submitted everything and pretty much paid for everything. I found out that if I amended the return, I should actually be getting more money back, I believe.
Oh, did you double report, you mean? Because
I haven't yet. I sent a report. But
no,
I,
Keith,
I think
what,
I have to.
Sorry, what I meant was, did you, let's, and we're going to make pretend numbers, okay? So let's
sure.
pretend the people who are employees get W-2s. And
yes.
the employer pays that, you know, reports that on the W-2. If you're self-employed, the provider who paid you over $600 would give you a 1099 miscellaneous, and that is self-employment income, all right? So let's pretend you had $5,000 on a W-2 and you had $5,000 of what you thought was miscellaneous income, and then lo and behold, you didn't realize that the employer included the what you thought was self-employment income on the W-2. Is that what happened?
No. So I actually have multiple jobs. I should have said that from
okay.
the beginning. So I do have two jobs that have W-2s, and then the one that I was doing is an independent contractor.
Okay.
So I received the W-2s, filled in all of that, and then I wasn't sure what to do for the money that I I got from that restaurant, mm-hmm. I was unaware that they would send me paperwork later. And so I filled out my taxes before getting the paperwork from them.
Okay, so then you actually received the 1099 miscellaneous after you filed your taxes.
Yes.
All right, so yeah, you would definitely have to amend your return because those tax forms are reported to the IRS. So if you receive it, the IRS is going to be receiving it also. You want to wait until you've actually received either the refund or made the payment for your tax return because the IRS will get confused if you send a second one in while the first one's still working on it. So when you do that, you're going to include that income from the 1099 miscellaneous on your Schedule C as your business income. And against that, you can include any expenses that you incurred in providing those services.
Okay.
So when someone told you they thought you would get more money back, that is the part I'm not sure about.
When I say more money back, I just mean I would have to pay in less. So I did have to pay in a decent amount. And the numbers that they reported were actually lower than what I estimated that I actually gained that year.
Oh, I see. So you did report some income. You just didn't know that they were going to send you the 1099. So you did a good job and reported what you thought they paid you, but it ended up being less. All right. Yeah, so it's easy if you use software. I don't know if you use one of the free programs or if you had bought your own software. If you bought your own software, it's pretty easy to amend a return. If you did it with one of the free ones online, I don't know how easy it is to amend if you can tap back into that software. So a lot of times you just start from your original return and then, you know, click buttons to say amend and change the numbers how they were supposed to be. So
okay.
Good luck with that, Keith. But I think you're going to, you know, it sounds like you're on the right path to figuring it out, though. But as May said, wait until you make sure your other return is kind of processed.
Yeah, I think they have been already, so I might actually do that really soon.
Okay. All right. Good luck with that. Thank you for calling.
Thank you so much.
Have a good night. Folks, if you have questions, phone number is 610-758-8810. So that let's comment on that for a minute. So we were talking about looking at tax returns and looking at income. It is a little bit more difficult for self-employed people because sometimes they don't know if they're going to get a 1099. So what can they expect typically?
Well, typically, during the year, you should make sure that you're keeping track of the income and from all the sources you're receiving it from with your business. If you make over $600, that business or company should be providing you with a 1099 miscellaneous. When you receive that, it may actually not include amounts that they reimbursed you for things. If they did reimburse you for things and that those amounts are not on the 1099 miscellaneous, make sure that you are not taking those expenses still on your business. Otherwise, you'll be double dipping.
That's a good point to make. So if someone was paid $5,000 and also was reimbursed $500 for travel, that 1099 miss could end up coming with it could be either $5,500 or $5,000. If it's $5,000, they didn't include the reimbursement, you don't take the deduction. If it's $5,500, you report the $5,500, but then you claim the $500 of deduction.
Yeah, that's correct.
Okay. All right. Now, a big hint to know if they are going to issue a 1099 miscellaneous is when they have requested you to complete a W-9 form. So anyone who's issuing a 1099 has to have a W-4 on file, which is basically you confirming your name, address, and social security number and how you're to be paid. So, Keith, good luck with that. It was a great call and an appropriate question because, May, we also sometimes get people who will have filed their tax returns and then they get a corrected 1099 from the brokerage mm-hmm. firm. Do you have some kind of rules of thumb on that quickly?
Yeah, there's actually a new pronouncement that if the change is $100 or less, you do not need to file an amended return.
Yay, I didn't even know about the new pronouncement. May, she's the encyclopedia, remember I said that last week. So there's a new pronouncement that if the income doesn't change more than $100, you do not have to amend.
That's correct. So if your income changed by $3.50, you don't have to go through the entire process of amending your return.
That's great to know. So what you would do if you get a corrected 1099, pull out your original 1099, compare the numbers. Usually it's marked what's corrected, and you might not have anything to worry about. Folks, we're at our second break. If you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. 610-758-8810. Back in a minute.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including income tax preparation for individuals, businesses, estates, and trusts. Tax preparation involves more than putting numbers on a return. It requires planning. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
American folk music offers a variegated pattern of performers and styles. I'm Tom Druckenmiller, your host for In the Tradition. Together, we'll trace the roots and branches of American folk music from the earliest recordings and performers through today's talented players. In the Tradition, Wednesday evening from 7 to 9 p.m. on WDIY 88.1 FM and WDIY.org.
Welcome back to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. You're listening to Your Financial Choices, and I have in the studio with me this evening Mae Gerhart, a senior tax preparer and financial planner at Valley National Financial Advisors. And we are talking about using your tax return as a financial planning tool. And in between, we are also taking tax questions or listeners' questions in general. The phone number is 610-758-8810. And you can talk live on air with us or off air, whatever you're more comfortable doing. We decided to kind of continue that discussion because last week I think we had about 8 calls, right, Mae? So we thought, wow, people are having questions and we want to help, of course. When we talked about using the tax return as a financial planning tool, one of the things we talked about was cash flow. We want to make sure and confirm that when we're doing any kind of projection that we're using the right income numbers. We talked about wages. We talked about making sure that doesn't tell the whole story. We also need to look at the W-2 because gross wages are different than federal taxable wages. But we also talked about some of the codes that are on the W-2, but not everything is always on the W-2. Like, for example, I had someone give me a W-2 the other day, and this person's retired, but they have health insurance through this employer. And the federal wages were, I'm just going to make up a number, like $7,000. And they also had medical coverage of, let's say, $7,000. But the medical insurance is not taxable for federal or state or Medicare. But usually, she said she was used to seeing the medical insurance in the box, and it wasn't there. So what happens if we're not seeing some of those codes on the W-2? Looking at a pay stub, what kind of things can we get off a pay stub?
Pay stubs have a lot of great pieces of information. On them, you can see union dues, which might have been withheld on a per-pay basis. Maybe you're making charitable deductions to United Way. You'll be able to see whether or not you might be reimbursed by your employer for certain expenses, which we definitely don't want to double dip on.
Mm-hmm.
And you might be able to get bonuses. If you're getting bonuses, there's a completely different tax withholding bracket for that.
Right. So if someone's doing a projection and they're using one pay stub, but that doesn't account for like a bonus that might be coming in.
No. And with the new tax law, that percentage has been decreased. So maybe you're in the 37% bracket, but you're not having 37% withheld.
Oh, OK. So the mandatory withholdings on a bonus aren't what did they go to? Is it like 22%?
I don't recall.
Okay. So in back in the day, certain distributions, even out of retirement accounts, were like a mandatory 25%. So I imagine with tax reform, those kind of mandatory numbers have all changed. So people should kind of get that out of their mind and watch what they're doing. Let's quickly move to Schedule A, and then we can start talking about some of the other things. So why did I mention Schedule A? Because when we're talking about cash flow, we talked about the sources of income on on the beginning part of the tax return. I can't say page one anymore. Schedule A talks about some expenses that people have. So what are we looking for on a Schedule A when we're doing financial planning?
Well, thankfully, the Schedule A, even though it's changed a bit this year, it's still basically the same outline. So the first section, you have your medical expenses. If it's over 7.5%, you might be able to deduct them on your Schedule A. But you can also take that over into New Jersey, which has a 2% threshold. On your Schedule A, you'll also have mortgage interest. You might be able to see what type of house debt you might have. If it was up significantly in 2017 and it's quite a bit lower in 2018, it might be because you actually have a home equity line of credit, which is not deductible anymore if it wasn't used for acquisition purposes. Mortgage insurance premiums, you might be able to see on the 2017 tax return. If the value of the house has been paid down to less than 80%, then you might actually be able to call in and have that mortgage insurance premiums removed. So your monthly mortgage payment might go down $100 to $300 a month. You can also take a look at the charity to see whether or not there's making cash contributions, if you make contributions of donated goods, or if you do appreciated securities. Maybe you've been holding on to Microsoft for quite a few years and it's way up, and instead of recognizing that capital gain, you want to be able to donate that directly to a charity of your choice, like WDIY.
There you go. So that tells a whole nother story. Schedule A. So the tax return, well, this is why, again, we get excited. The tax return is telling us a story about the person. So for our listeners, if you pull out your tax return and start looking at it, you could say, what story is my tax return telling, you know, a financial planner, a financial advisor, or a tax preparer? What is the story telling? But I quickly want to jump back on, you did mention the medical expenses and how that could be very important to people in New Jersey. So for our New Jersey listeners, you've got to be very careful with your W-2s, because the medical is not on a pre-tax basis, because New Jersey gives a medical deduction. So you really need the pay stubs for people in New Jersey to kind of compare the W-2 and the pay stubs to make sure you're getting the full deduction on New Jersey if you're eligible for it. Now, it is a 2%. It's anything over 2% of the income in New Jersey.
Yeah, that's correct.
So some people may not get it because their income might be too high, more than their expenses. But there are probably a whole bunch of people that don't realize they actually need to kind of refine the detail on the medical expenses in case they could get that deduction on New Jersey. You also mentioned that PMI, the mortgage insurance. I think that was a great point, May. So again, it's back to financial planning. We're only doing a tax return, big whoop-de-doo, but guess what? She made a great point. If you have a mortgage and at the time you financed, you didn't have 20% down, maybe you only put 10% down, you were required to get
private mortgage insurance.
Private mortgage insurance, PMI for short. Private mortgage insurance. Once you get to 20% equity, or 80% of the loan value, basically, then you can forego the PMI. That extra payment might be, I don't know, I'm going to make up $50 a month, $100 a month, whatever it might be, based on the value of probably when you got the loan.
Mm-hmm.
You're saying once you reach that equity point, you can call the mortgage company and say, hey, can you either revalue my house, do the appraisal, or notice that the loan is down and you could stop paying that extra amount?
Yeah, it's going to depend on what the original terms of the loan were. It might have an automatic provision where all you have to do is call in and they'll take it off. But you might not be one of the lucky ones, and you might actually have to refinance your house to get it taken off.
Okay. So it could change because maybe the market conditions went up,
mm-hmm.
or it could be that you paid extra on your loan and got it down quicker so that you have that equity. So kind of be mindful of that. Watch that when you get your monthly bill on your monthly mortgage to see if you're getting close to that 20% equity, and then you can forego the PMI. So very good. And that used to be deductible, May said, in 2017, depending on your income level. If you were, you know, below a certain income threshold, you could take it as a deduction, and that is no longer available. Now, May, was that one of the ones you mentioned last week that they're trying to put a patch through, that people may get that?
Yeah, it was heard on the House floor last week, I believe it was, and it's just kind of sitting there right now, so we're not sure if it'll actually go through.
Okay, all right, so people shouldn't count on that. Folks, we're at the halfway point. If you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810, and you could talk live on air with us or off air, whatever you're more comfortable doing. The number again is 610-758-8810. We're talking about either financial planning tonight or taxes. Listeners' questions, always welcome. So we will be back in just a minute.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including estate planning and tax preparation, especially for Pennsylvania and New Jersey residents subject to state inheritance tax reporting. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000. WDIY thanks its members.
WDIY Allentown 88.1. It's 6:30. Here's a look at your weather. 53 degrees right now. Tonight, a chance of rain mainly after 1 a.m. Increasing clouds with a low around 35. Thursday, high near 48. Thursday night, cloudy with a low around 40. Friday, a chance of showers, partly sunny with a high near 48. Friday night, mostly cloudy with a low around 29. And Saturday is going to be mostly sunny with a high near 43. And Saturday night, mostly clear with a low around 29. Now back to your financial choices with Lori Seabird.
Thank you, Shandi. Welcome back, folks. We are talking with May Gerhart from Valley National Financial Advisors this evening. She's a senior tax preparer and financial planner at Valley National. And we are talking about using the tax return as a tool in financial planning. And we are also taking listeners' questions this evening. The phone number is 610-758-8810. 610-758-8810. You can talk live on air with us, or if you're not comfortable doing that, you can give your question to Lori C. She will write it down and she'll bring it into the studio and we'll do our best to answer the question. So you just have to listen then. So you can either talk live with us or off air, whatever you're more comfortable doing. May, to go back to using the tax return as a tool, a couple things. You mentioned when we're looking at Schedule A, we're looking at charitable giving, and sometimes people will donate appreciated securities. So appreciated securities is, you know, it could be a mutual fund, it could be individual stocks. Let's now go back to the front page of the tax return where we're talking about the cash flow and the resources. So we talked about wages and business income, but investment income. So we said charitable giving might be appreciated securities. Appreciated securities means someone has investments. So let's talk about the investments and what are we looking for there and what does the tax return tell us?
The tax return is going to tell us how much interest that they're making. It'll also tell us whether or not they have savings, whether or not they're good savers. Maybe they have money sitting in their bank account and it's their emergency fund, which is a great thing to have. 3 to 6 months, everybody should. We'll be able to tell whether or not they have capital gains and capital losses. That would show that they have maybe stocks or mutual funds. It might show whether or not they have an investment advisor currently or whether or not they're trying to do day trading on their own, like with Robinhood.
Mm.
We could see if they have any large capital loss carryovers, which might illustrate that they held on to something for quite a while and will be able to offset that income amount for a couple years going forward. We'll look at their stocks and mutual funds to see the types of dividends that they have, if they have ordinary dividends or qualified dividends. And we might see a bunch of tax-free interest on there, maybe from savings bonds that are coming due.
Okay. You mentioned ordinary dividends and qualified dividends. This is something I think really important to kind of point out to folks because they get a 1099 and it'll show ordinary dividends of $500 and qualified dividends $400. Explain what that means and why that's important, not just from an investment standpoint, an income tax standpoint, but a cash flow standpoint.
Well, it's about the amount of money that actually comes in and the tax bracket that you're going to have to pay on it. The qualified dividends do have a preferential treatment with three main tax brackets. You might be in the 0%, the 15%, or the 20% bracket for that.
And so the qualified dividends qualify for a lower tax rate. And so when we're looking at the tax return, we might see interest, mm-hmm. interest income. You said that could be from a bank account, CDs. And that interest income is taxed at what rates?
Your ordinary rates.
Ordinary rates. So if I'm in a 37% tax bracket, I could end up paying 37% on that interest. If I'm in a 12% tax bracket, I could pay 12% on the interest.
That's correct. And if you were to invest in something that provides ordinary or qualified dividends, if it's qualified dividends, then instead of having it in the 12% bracket, you'd be at the 0% tax rate.
We love qualified dividends. And if I'm in a 20, 4% tax bracket? The qualified dividends are taxed at what rate?
I don't recall. They actually didn't increase the brackets when they went with the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act. So it's actually using the old threshold numbers, despite the fact we have new bracket rates.
Yeah, but it ballpark, it's probably still 15%.
Yeah, that
sounds
about right.
Qualified dividends. So the qualified dividends, when we're looking at the tax return, it tells us someone's maybe investment style. It tells us their cash flow could be impacted by lowering their taxes. So if we can lower the taxes, we have more cash flow for them. You also mentioned tax-exempt interest. So tax-exempt interest might be municipals. So if we're looking for financial planning, we see someone who's a Pennsylvania resident, they have all kinds of tax-exempt interest, we might be looking at what in their investments.
We would want to see that those municipals are actually Pennsylvania municipals so that they can be tax exempt in Pennsylvania.
Okay, so they may not be Pennsylvania municipals, so they still would get the tax exempt status for federal, but they would be taxable for PA. And sometimes people don't think about that. They don't realize what they're doing when they're investing. You know, if they think it's tax exempt, they might think it's tax exempt for PA too. Mm-hmm. Back in the day, May might be too young to even remember this. Back in the day, they didn't even report the tax exempt income on 1099s. So a lot of people just thought, well, if it's tax exempt for federal, it's tax exempt for state. And that was not the case. It had to be broken out. But I think a lot of people just made the assumption. And there wasn't always a sharing of information between the Fed and the state, you know, eons ago. So now there's a lot of sharing. And I think even the state shares with the locals now. So there's not too much that you can get away with on missing things. Let's talk about, so that's, when you're doing planning, you're talking about being strategic with the investment planning as far as qualified dividends and tax-exempt interest and that type of thing. Let's talk about retirement accounts. So we mentioned at the beginning of the show, one of the elements of financial planning was also retirement. So let's talk about retirement. What are we looking for? What does the tax return tell us in general? And then any other comments you have about retirement accounts in financial planning and tax?
Well, our W-2 will show us how much money that you're putting into your 401k or 403b at work. If you're looking at a pay stub, you'll be able to see maybe if there's an employer match portion. On the tax return, you'll be able to see if they're putting money into an IRA or if they might be doing a non-deductible IRA contribution.
Or even a Roth, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
That might show up on the tax return. It's not a deduction. The Roth isn't a deduction on the tax return, but it might show up on like the Form 8606 or something like that.
Yeah, you might see that they're putting some funds in, or you might be helping them figure out how much that they can actually qualify to put in because the different accounts have different rates mm-hmm. that you're allowed to put in. A lot of times it's up to your actual sweat equity income. Mm-hmm. So maybe your W-2 income or your business income. It'll also show if you're putting money into a SEP account.
Mm-hmm. So with the retirement accounts, you said if they're employed, they have their W-2. That's one of those codes we would see on the W-2, mm-hmm. the 401k. But the pay stub you mentioned might show the employer match.
Yeah, and you want to make sure that you're taking advantage of whatever the employer match is.
Can you explain what employer match is for the companies that do it?
Yeah, so an employee is deciding to put money into their 401k account and their employer might offer to match a certain percentage. Maybe they'll put 3% if you put 3% in, or maybe they'll give you 3% up to the first 3% and then half of the next 2%. So the employer might match 4% on you putting 5% in.
Okay, so that's found money, really. The employer match, if you're not putting money in, that's found money. So that is a financial planning technique that we uncover for people if they weren't taking advantage of the employer match. And don't you find that sometimes what happens is people might start out in a new job, they are maybe setting up their household or apartment, kind of getting started in life. They think they can't afford to put away some money into their retirement plan.
Mm-hmm.
And X number of years pass. And guess what they forgot to do?
They forgot to set it up.
So it's something that should be revisited. And typically people revisit that at open enrollment time. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of different benefits they can review at open enrollment time, right?
Yeah, you can review life insurance. Maybe your employer covers you up to one or two times your salary, but they might even offer an option that you can increase the amount of life insurance that you have. Some employers will have disability insurance. Maybe it's included. Maybe you have to purchase your own. But a lot of them will actually let you do it directly through a payroll deduction.
Okay. So that's part of the risk management then. There you go again. Okay. So much that we can learn from looking at the W-2s. Now, and pay stub. So the pay stub might tell us about the employer match. You mentioned it could be a 401k, 403b. Those are the codes on the W-2. We would also see it on the pay stub. What if someone is putting money into a designated Roth, which is the what I call the Roth 401k? So the Roth 401k, what are we going to see on the pay stub? How are we going to know if it's a Roth or the 401k? The W-2, tell us what the W-2 would look like, but then tell us what we might see on the pay stub.
Well, on the pay stub, usually you'll have the deductible pre-tax items in the top section of the pay stub, and you'll see the post-tax contributions further down. I know ADP actually uses an asterisk to say that it is after tax.
Okay, so that's the signal that you might be doing the Roth feature. And a lot of companies for years and years did not offer the Roth feature. It was kind of all just pre-tax. And then as I think they must have like realized it was, you know, here to stay, the Roth feature in a 401k, more companies have implemented it. So that is also something that maybe employees who've been employed for a long time, who have set it and forget it, they also need to revisit to see if their employer plans now offer that Roth feature. Because depending on what your income is, it might make sense to do the Roth instead of the pre-tax.
Yeah, you're going to want to look at what your income is now and what bracket you're in now. And with the change in tax brackets potentially sunsetting the end of 2025, your tax rates in 2026 and beyond might be higher than they are today.
So you might want to take advantage of the lower brackets today. And then when we sunset and go to higher tax brackets, then you could go back to the pre-tax position possibly. I also love Roths for new graduates, because you're probably at the lowest income earning years of your life. And it's a great way to start saving right away. And so if you're newly employed and you're kind of just starting out and you have lower income, really check out if your employer has, first of all, an employer plan, and if they do, whether it makes sense to do the Roth feature. And if they don't have an employer plan, you can always do the individual Roth and the individual IRA. How much in 2019 can someone contribute to the Roth IRA if they're just doing an individual plan, kind of outside of an employer? If they're under, is it $6,000, I think, in 2019?
Yeah, $6,000 for 2019.
And if they're over 50?
Then they get $1,000 catch up.
Okay, great. Folks, we have a couple minutes to our next break, and we are here to answer questions tonight if you have any. The phone number is 610-758-8810. That's 610-758-8810. You can talk live on air with us or off air, whatever you're more comfortable. And you can also send questions through yourfinancialchoices.com as well. We have been talking tonight about using the tax return as a financial planning tool. It really is a kind of an open book into someone's financial decisions. It really helps a financial planner understand someone's ability to save, their saving strategies, their risk tolerance when we're looking at what kind of investments they have, their retirement planning when we look at W-2s to see what kind of savings you have in your retirement plans. One caution I have noticed in the past is when I have seen, when I'm looking at a tax return and I see all wages and maybe no interest, no dividends, no other investment income, and I see that someone is maxing out their 401k, and that seems like a great thing to do, that you're a great saver and you're maxing everything in your retirement account. My only concern then is that if you ever need money after you retire and you have to take money out to live on, it's all income taxable if it's in a regular 401k or rollover IRA. So try to plan not just to save into your retirement accounts, but as May mentioned earlier, save with an emergency reserve. But then even if you can save a little bit more to have some in an individual account or a joint account with a spouse, so that if you do have to tap money, you're not having to always pull everything out of a taxable retirement account in your retirement. All right, folks, we are at our last break. The phone number is 610-758-8810. Back in a minute.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services including portfolio management, tax return preparation, and financial planning for the accumulation years, retirement years, and estate distribution. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
Not only is becoming a WDIY member a great way to support the programs you love, it has its benefits. WDIY members have access to our weekly member ticket giveaway emails. Discover great concerts, theater performances, film screenings, and more, all while supporting the many choices and real voices on WDIY. Make your gift today at 610-694-8100 extension 7 or wdiy.org. Thank you.
Welcome back to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. You're listening to Your Financial Choices, and I have in the studio with me this evening May Gerhart, Valley National Financial Advisor. She's a senior tax preparer and financial planner, and we are talking about ways to use your tax return as a financial planning tool. And we do that. We use your tax return as a financial planning tool, and it's just a fabulous way to kind of get a measure of how you're doing and what maybe areas you might need a little tweaking in here and there. Quite often we have people who come in and maybe want a financial plan, and they could be doing a great job with saving, they could be doing a great job with their cash flow, but there might be little tweaks that you can do here and there that can make a difference. That's kind of what we're talking about, the little tweaks about whether you get your employer match, the tweak about whether you do the regular pre-tax 401k or the Roth 401k or a Roth IRA or a non-deductible IRA. There's just so many little tweaks that people can do, and I use the word amp up your success of reaching your goals. So what can we do to amp up that success? May, earlier we talked a little bit about when you look at the open enrollment period and you can review the benefits through the employer. Not everybody has that. But we talked about disability insurance and life insurance, maybe health insurance options. That's called risk management. It doesn't always seem like it's tied to the tax return, and not everybody has employer benefits. But what kind of risks might a tax return also kind of, you know, point out to people when we're looking at a tax return? What kind of risk management that we might see that we'd want to watch out for?
Well, you'd be able to identify the ages of the persons whose tax return it is. You'd see if they have health insurance and maybe life insurance amounts. If they have mortgages or children that they want to put through college and they don't have life insurance that would be able to meet those needs should you pass away early, that would be a very large risk, leaving your family with those large debts after you're gone.
Mm-hmm. So that is that window. We could see children, if maybe they're putting money into a 529 account, because that's a deduction on Pennsylvania's return. You said a mortgage. That means that if they have a mortgage, if someone were to pass away and it might be the breadwinner, that's exposure. So then in the financial planning, that financial element of risk management, that's where you're kind of looking to make sure they have adequate coverage should a need arise. And I always like to say, if you plan, nothing happens.
Yeah, you'll also be able to look into disability, whether it's short-term or long-term disability. Maybe they're planning on having children, and you might want to get a short-term disability plan to help cover maternity leave if your employer doesn't offer it.
Okay. Let's talk about education planning. Wasn't one of the like financial planning elements that we had mentioned specifically. We talked about cash flow, investments, taxes, retirement planning, risk management. We're going to talk about estate planning in a little bit, but you also had mentioned there could be business planning, which could be very complicated. But real quick, a little arm of some of the financial planning might be education planning. We just said we could have kids. So what are we looking at from an education funding kind of planning strategies that someone might use?
Well, we want to see how much money that they're putting into 529 plans. You don't always want to completely fund the college education with the 529 plans because you might not be able to take advantage of the American Opportunity Tax Credit, which could be up to $4,000, but it would require you to have after-tax monies being used for that.
Okay, so first of all, 529 is what?
529 is an education plan.
It's an education savings plan that people put money into. And in Pennsylvania, we get a deduction for that.
We do, up to the annual gift limit per person, which offsets wage income.
Okay. Any income up to that amount. So if it's $14,000, I could have $14,000 of dividends and get $14,000 deduction. So it's income offset. But each person, if let's say the husband does 14 and the wife, or 15,000 now in 2019, it's 15,000. So the husband could do it and the wife could do it, but they both have to have income of at least $15,000 to get that deduction.
That's correct.
Okay. And so then that goes into a 529 account. We just got a deduction on Pennsylvania. The benefit of having the money in the 529 is what?
That when it comes out, if it's used for qualified education purposes, then it's not taxable.
Okay, so that's good to know. But May had also mentioned, this is where we talk about coordination of benefits. You have a 529 that's going to help pay for the education, but she also mentioned this American Opportunity Tax Credit. And if you have at least $4,000 of qualified education expenses for the American Opportunity Credit, and the qualified education expenses can be different depending on what education benefit you're looking at, whether it's lifetime learning credit, American Opportunity Credit,
tuition and fees deduction.
All different things. You have to, using the 529 distributions, there's different qualified education expenses. For the American Opportunity Credit, you have to have $4,000 of tuition, basically, to qualify for a $2,500 tax credit. So that's where we want to make sure that if there's some kind of free money, that's the amp up the financial planning. Free money of $2,500 if you qualify. There's income limits and things like that. But if you qualify for it, we want to make sure that you're taking advantage of that, because then you have to use, then you can use less of the 529 and let that work for you a little bit longer. Nice thing about 529s, those can be used for room and board. And a lot of people don't realize that room and board can actually be, if your kid is renting an apartment, it can't be more than what the institution would charge for room and board with their standard rates. But a lot of folks miss that. They think that they can only take money out of the 529 for their, you know, the money they're paying to the college, and it's not exactly that. So keep that in mind. I want to kind of talk a little bit about estate planning too. So when we're looking at the tax return and when you're doing financial planning, what is important that you're looking at when we're talking about estate planning? You're gathering information about their assets.
Yeah, we'll do their assets and their titling. A lot of times at the end of the year with your tax return information, you'll receive a form that actually might include the beneficiary designations and whether or not they're secondary beneficiaries. Maybe you have it set so that your spouse receives it, but if something were to happen to both of you, then the money could end up in your estate.
So the form you're referring to is a form 5498, which gives the value of an IRA at the end of the year.
Yeah, and those are often sent over the summer. So we have clients call in and say, hey, I received this tax form after your tax return was in. So what am I supposed to do with it? Do you need it?
No, it's just informational.
Yep, that's correct. You don't need any of that information for your return, but you definitely want to look at it.
So the Form 5498, we're seeing some of those come in, but as you said, some custodians don't issue them till later because it's just informational filing. So on there, you're looking for the value at the end of the year, and you said it usually reflects the beneficiaries. So it would be primary beneficiaries and contingent beneficiaries.
Mm-hmm.
So if you are married and it's your spouse's primary and nothing else, then you might not know who the contingent beneficiary is.
And you should call in and check and always make sure that you have contingent beneficiaries set. You might also find that it was an ex-spouse. And if something were to happen, your current spouse would not be very happy.
Yeah. So use those tax documents. What's What's valuable too, if May mentioned, you always want to have a contingent beneficiary. This is really important, and it's important to discuss with your attorney or your financial advisor when you're doing estate planning. The reason I love contingent beneficiaries so much is because it gives an extra level of planning. And what I mean by that is if I am married and I want my spouse to have my retirement account, I name my spouse as the primary beneficiary. We see that all the time. Consistently you name your spouse primary beneficiary. I have three children. I would, in my story, I'm going to name my three children contingent beneficiaries. So let's say I die. I'm gone. I don't have a problem with that. And my spouse is going to inherit, and I'm going to make up a number, my $100,000 IRA. But I'm going to call it $120,000 because I want to divide it by three. My husband's going to inherit my $120,000 IRA, and he doesn't need it. He doesn't need it at all. He has plenty of other money, and he really would love to do something for the kids. With the contingent beneficiary designation, following certain rules, my husband can disclaim his right to the IRA. But he doesn't get to decide who it goes to if he disclaims it. If he says he doesn't want it, it's as if he has died. He doesn't get to decide who it goes to. I got to decide who it goes to. So if I name my spouse and he's the primary beneficiary and he disclaims it, then it defaults to my next beneficiaries. So if I have named my three children, my husband disclaims it, and there's certain rules around that, so I'm not giving legal advice. You can talk to your attorney about this at the time. He can disclaim it, and it could go to my three kids, and that's one-third each. So one-third each, they would end up getting the IRA. It would be an inherited IRA. Now, here's the difference. My husband could take the IRA as the primary beneficiary and make it his own. But my children, if they were to inherit it, they can't make it their own. They would have to take it as a beneficiary IRA. But the wonderful thing is my children expect to have a longer life expectancy than my husband. So if my husband had made it his own and his life expectancy might have been 25 years, he would have to take that IRA out. If he made it his own, he would have to take it out over his life expectancy, starting with his required minimum distribution date at age 70 and a half. But my children could take it out over their life expectancy, and their life expectancy might be, 60 years. So that's another planning technique. That's why when we're looking at these tax documents, that was the Form 5498 May had mentioned. That's why when we're looking at these tax documents, they just provide wonderful amounts of information. So May, talking, let's kind of wrap up. We have a minute. Using the tax return as a tool for financial planning, how would you like to summarize what we've been talking about tonight? Too much to say, right, May? You should see her face. Too much to say.
Tax returns have an immense level of information available on them to help with your financial plan. Everyone should have a financial plan. It's something that changes with you. We call them roadmaps. It's a roadmap. It's a direction to where you want to go and how you're going to get there, with a general outline of what to do on your way there. And using a tax return, you can get a lot of really good information and make a lot of good decisions that can help reduce your taxable income, put more into your accounts for when you get older, help cover your children's tuition costs, make sure that your family is going to be covered in the event that something were to happen to you. But the best part of financial plans is that they change over time, and they change with you depending on your life stages.
That's great. And we didn't even talk about the goals. We just, because we tend to jump into the numbers. So you also look at those goals that you want to reach through this roadmap process.
Yeah, we look into whether or not you want to buy another home, if you want to only fund a portion of your children's college expenses, if you want to help put money into their weddings. There's a lot of goals that we can take a look at for that during tax planning and financial planning also.
Okay. May, it was great having you back. I expect that May will probably come back more regularly as well. Thank you for being here. It was really fun. She's has a wealth of information and knowledge. We appreciate it. Thank you, caller. So, Keith, for calling in tonight. We really appreciate it. If you did have a question and it was a little bit too complicated, you can always send it through the website, yourfinancialchoices.com. And we'll do our best to answer them. I just realized, folks, I don't have a topic for next week. I looked at my calendar and it's like, whoops, I've been tax season, so I've kind of been preoccupied with that. So next week, maybe I'll just do tax questions again, or we'll talk about what happens if you have to extend your tax return or amend your tax return, because Keith had a question tonight about amending your tax return. So maybe next week I'll talk about amending tax returns. If you have changes, what does that look like? Or doing installment payments and things like that. Folks, thanks so much. May, thank you so much for being here. If people want to reach you, they call you at
610-868-9000, extension 114, or by email at mgerhart@valleynationalgroup.com.
Thanks a lot, May. Thanks, Lori. Thanks, Shandi. Coming up next, we have Tom Druckenmiller with In the Tradition Folk Music. Remember, pay attention, be proactive, not reactive. Make the best of your financial choices, and have a great week.